conflict mineral mining magnate, who's also Israeli, and who has been using those profits in many ways. Those have gone to enrich him, but also vicariously the Israeli state, and therefore the oppression, contributing to the oppression of Palestinian people. So those connections are there, and we raised the flag, we held up the flag, because we couldn't rely on just a chant, mm-hmm. because that could be ignored. And even if we gave an interview, maybe not like this one, but with the New York Times, for example, New York Times gave a story on the fact that there had been no protests at HBCUs, or relatively few. And, you know, I was really misquoted in terms of saying that Joe Biden seems like a decent person. But I don't know, why am I saying that again? I shouldn't be even saying it again. But compared to Donald Trump, I guess anybody could be a decent person. But he does not get it. He does not. He may have the Dr. King bust in the Resolute desk, or at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, but he is not listening to King. He needs to listen to HBCU faculty, who really have held out the only hope of real social change in America in its history, especially in the 20th century, but we could go back even further. So we held the flag for those reasons. Congo deserves justice, reparations from the United States for the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, conspiring in that assassination.
5 seconds.
And yes. And
hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross. And when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, May 20th at 4:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. What that means is that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during the last week of our spring membership drive, your support can go even farther. Contribute today at bit.ly/KBOO. That's bit.ly/KBOO. And your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now and help us reach our $60,000 goal by May 25th. Thanks so much.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing nonpartisan election information at lwvpdx.org. The League of Women Voters has online voters' guides, videos, and podcasts to help voters understand the state and local candidates and measures that will be on the ballot this May. Nonpartisan voter information at lwvpdx.org.
KBOO.
Good morning, and you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is the 20th of May, 2024, and if you are listening live, it is about 8:02 a.m. I hope all are well this morning, and thank you for joining and spending some time this morning with us this morning. As I mentioned, today is the 20th of May. And for those of you who are counting down, there's only a few more days until the end of May and then the beginning of June. And the days are longer. But also, this is May's the season of celebrations and observations. And I want to acknowledge this day that on May 19th is the anniversary of the birth of the man known as, popularly known as Malcolm X. I received a text from a cousin yesterday who was at the Audubon Ballroom, and she was so excited because she was there at a celebration of Malcolm X. And you are probably familiar that Malcolm was assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom in New York. And my cousin Elena mentioned it was such an exciting time to be there at the Audubon Ballroom, and that in fact they are planning for Malcolm's 100th anniversary next year, and they have transformed the Audubon Ballroom to the Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz Educational Center. And with that introduction, I thought I would like to talk a little bit about Malcolm with someone who I first heard on the radio, on this station many, many years ago. And they were an anchor of reassurance that life is possible in Portland, Oregon. And so joining me right now, and she's a very busy person. She's a award-winning journalist and very modest. Lenita Duke, how are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, Cecil. Thank you so much for having me on this wonderful celebration and commemoration. Just talking about Malcolm makes me happy.
Thank you so much. And, you know, Malcolm, as you know, was such a person of enormous talent and influence and impacted people many different ways. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is how he influenced you. I mentioned briefly that I heard you on the radio station, you know, many, many years ago, and you had a tagline about agitate, blah, 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 and I don't know whether you trademarked it or what, but you agitate for social change. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, great. So tell me something about how you encountered Malcolm as a child, I suppose.
Well, it was wonderful being a child of the 70s. And in the mid-70s, the early 70s, I dropped out of the Portland Public Schools, which was a horrible place. I don't know how it is now. There's some strengths and weaknesses within the Portland Public Schools, but at that time, it was a really horrible place to educate children. So I dropped out, I dropped out of middle school, and then I would play hooky in the public library. And at that time, the public library system just moved from bookmobiles to a structure. So we had our first, the Albina Branch Library, that was in a strip mall. And I would go there, and it wasn't very well attended, you know, so it'd be empty during the day, and I'd be there reading books. And I happened to encounter the autobiography of Malcolm X by Alex Haley. And I was engrossed in it. That was one of my first novels I ever read. And it was truly a remarkable, and is a remarkable autobiography. It's written with rhythm. It's written with emotion. And granted, there are other books about Malcolm that are a bit more explicit, but the harmonies and rhythm that Alex Haley wrote in the autobiography of Malcolm X truly impacted me. And among the things you learn about Malcolm X is the ability to change. And he went through so much in his life, had so many different identity. Mm-hmm. And what attracted me also to him as a young kid is that he was in foster care. I was raised in foster care, so that has attracted me about Malcolm. He was involved in petty criminal behavior, what we call the fast life. I was fascinated with the fast life. And he went to prison. I did not go to prison, but, you know, I know a lot of people go to prison. And prison doesn't have to be, you know, an institution. There's all kind of prisons of the mind that you can be wrapped up in, right?
Yes, yes.
So if you read and follow the story of Malcolm, so he went to prison, okay, and then in prison he encountered the teachings of Elijah Muhammad. And he became a minister in Elijah Muhammad. And then he got out of prison and became a minister. And from there, he discovered something uncouth about the minister. And he went to Hajj. He had he was always evolving. He had a religious conversion mm-hmm. when he went to Mecca and realized that things are beyond race. But he was still... He still loved black people in America, and that's certainly something that we need. We need someone to love us, to not just love us as African Americans, but to love us as human beings. And that's the evolution that Malcolm X went to. When I hear right-wingers talk about by any means necessary, you know, that coin was not initially phrased by Malcolm, but it was embraced by Malcolm. And, of course, Malcolm always gave attribution to the Jesuits who coined that phrase by any means necessary.
Amazing.
But Malcolm used that to push black people to move toward their goal of independence and self-sufficiency. And that's another thing that attracted me about Malcolm, his emphasis on self-sufficiency, doing for self, helping others. He, although he wasn't a Christian, he would talk more about Christian principles. He never said, I want to get a big jet to fly around and proselytize. He never said anything like that. He talked about helping others and helping yourself and taking care of your family.
Indeed.
And there is a wonderful biography of him, this old school biography, was made in the 70s. It won an Academy Award at that time. It's called The Autobiography of Malcolm X. And if you ever have the opportunity to see it on YouTube or one of these old school streaming services, watch it because it's really moving. And it's just a collection of newsreels. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm X not only touched African Americans, he touched white Americans too. Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes was extremely influenced by Malcolm X. And as you know, right now, Let's Talk About Race, the show that I produce and edit, and you're one of the panelists for our show this week, is Malcolm X and Yuri Kochiyama, A Revolutionary Friendship. He touched the heart of a Japanese-American woman who lived in Harlem, and she witnessed his assassination.
Yes.
And she was changed into an activist forever. Malcolm X touched a lot of people, and I'm just so happy that here we are, at least me, I'm 2 days older than Smoke, and we're still talking about it.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm speaking with Lenita Duke for a few minutes, and we're speaking about Malcolm X. And you mentioned how Malcolm was always a man who was reading, who was always willing to open up his mind and to change. And you know, when he went to Mecca and he came back and came back to Harlem and said, you know, spoke to people and announced the inauguration of his new organization, he said in the Audubon Ballroom in 1964, "I'm going to tell you like it is. I hope you can take it like it is." and he continued to do that. He continued to emerge, to study, and to change. What lessons can we continue to get for him? And how do we counter the, as you mentioned, the right-wing embrace or certain phrases? And how can we reclaim the legacy of Malcolm?
Well, I like that phrase you use, Cecil, reclaiming. We need to reclaim that phrase. I think the white right-wing media has done a good job of reclaiming phrases. DEI is now a bad word. Affirmative action is a bad word. Words that woke, they took over woke. How did that become a bad word? How did that become bad? I mean, that was a badge of courage when you said somebody was woke or they had a rise in consciousness.
Yes.
We just need to reclaim those phrases and don't give up. That's one thing with Malcolm. I encounter people in my life, throughout my life, who got disenchanted with religion because they discovered their preacher or their religious leader was doing something that human beings do, which is to fail. And, you know, human beings fail you in all kinds of ways. Monetarily, they fail you in their behavior, right? And they fail you by what they engage in. And yet when Malcolm discovered that Elijah Muhammad was doing this, you're right. See, so he started another organization, the Organization of African American Unity, to transcend the breaks and chains of religion that religion puts on people, right? The limitations of religion, like, I can't be affiliated with you because you're a certain religion or mm-hmm. you believe a certain way. The Organization of African American Unity, he said all religions were welcome. All people were welcome. All nationalities were welcome. So one of the takeaways from Malcolm is that we're always evolving as human beings. And we're always evolving, trying to better ourselves. But at the same time, his basic premise was the same. Help yourself, help others, help your family, help your community. Fight against oppression. Those were all pretty consistent in his message. And like Ozzie Davis said, he was our prince, our black shining prince. Because he loved us. And to be loved that deeply that someone's going to give his life up to try to help you, that's pretty remarkable. He didn't want a car. He didn't want a plane. He just wanted people to help themselves, and he wanted to help them. He wanted to help them help themselves. That's a pretty revolutionary message.
Pretty revolutionary. And you mentioned being disenchanted with leaders, you know, religious, political leaders, and the example of Malcolm, I think, in terms of how he responded to the to coming to terms with someone who would it be too much of a stress to say that the Nation of Islam actually rescued Malcolm, and to see a man he honored so well, but to be able to not be so disenchanted that he wasn't able to act, I think, as you mentioned, is something a valuable lesson for all of us, because no one is perfect. But what can we do with the lessons we learned? And I think the example of Malcolm widening his understanding of humanity and being able to pick up from disappointment and build something better is a lesson, I think, for all of us, because where's the perfect organization?
Right, where's the perfect human being? Even, you know, from a strategic point of view, Malcolm was pretty genius when he wanted to take the plight of, what do you say, 22 million African Americans mm-hmm. to the UN. So he broke yes. beyond the confines of looking at race issues in America as just an American issue. He wanted to have the United Nations address it.
I'm glad you mentioned that in terms of Malcolm wanting to bring the case of what was happening to descendants of Africa in the United States to the United Nations. And I'm reminded of that with all that is happening in the world today. Could you say something about Malcolm when his journey to Africa and to other nations, and how it expanded his view and what it meant for other people and other nations to hear and speak and organize with Malcolm?
Well, Malcolm visited Africa during a really unique time in Africa when it was breaking away the chains of colonialism, right?
Yes.
And you had African nations fighting European powers for their freedom. And this was before neocolonialism came about. Mm-hmm. This is right when they broke the chains. And right. He was able to see what they were going through in Africa and correlate that back to what low-income people were going through in America and African-Americans were going through in America. He made those connections, and that was a really unique connection. In fact, it was that connection that he made that Martin Luther King Jr. made when he decided to go against the Vietnam War, right? And that was pretty radical of King at that time. And ironically, as King developed his philosophy, and he realized that America wasn't going to give up their power so readily, more inclined to listen to what Malcolm was saying. And then Malcolm, as they both evolved, was inclined to listen to what King was saying. And I know the media all had cast one as the good guy and the other one as the bad guy. So initially, you know, King was the good Negro and Malcolm X was the radical, scary black Negro.
Yes.
So, to answer your question, Malcolm was able to correlate the struggles of Africans who, and not just African, but Asians and the international community, the indigenous people who were fighting for their freedom. He correlated that to the struggles that African Americans go through in America. And also, he also talked about the plight of indigenous people in America as well. And he also talked about, and this is what, you know, our Malcolm X and Yuri Kochiyama, a revolutionary friendship, he also talked about how Japanese Americans, they were the ideal Americans, and yet during World War II, America had no hesitation putting them in concentration camps.
None whatsoever.
I know.
You know, as you talk, it's reminding me of how broad and how deep Malcolm's thinking and his ability to think about the future and the world we want to live. I know that you have to go and do your civic duty soon, so I don't want to keep you too much longer.
No, I'm fine. Thank you. It's just an honor to talk to you always on Mondays when I can. I try to listen to you and Althea Billings. Althea does her talk radio on Fridays. I can't always get to her. But on Mondays, I try to, if I can't call in, make an effort to listen to you. And I appreciate all the people that call in. And as you know, I have a real relationship with KBOO coming up because I've been around so long. But I appreciate the format of KBOO, and you want to kind of keep it open for the next generation so that another Cecil can walk in and start doing talk radio, or another Lenita Duke can pop up, right?
Exactly. And you have done so much in the community. I want to, you know, give you your flowers while I'm speaking to you, and for others to recognize that the type of work that you have done in the community, I think, is symbolic or reflective of the lessons you mentioned that you learned from Malcolm's and the elders in your community who talked about the importance of community and community building. And perhaps as before I let you go, perhaps you can say something about your sense of where particularly African Americans are right now, and what lessons can we learn from Malcolm for the future?
Wow, that's a good question. Where African Americans are right now, wow, I think there's no unified voice for African Americans. And sometimes that's good,
yes,
right? Because you want to have a diversity of voices. I think we are in a precarious position right now. I think we're in a weaker state, and I think we need a lot of little Malcolms to pop up in various generations, right, to be that voice, to advocate for people of color, to advocate for low-income people, to advocate for women's rights, to advocate for minority rights, and all these rights are under attack right now.
Indeed.
And when you see African-American males join the Trump train, because they want to feel empowered. They want to say they're the victims because they just got out of jail for not paying their child support, or they, you know, something in their life is not right. So they are attracted to that macho fascist image that Trump represents. I think black people are in a very precarious position. I feel for our young, but this is what folks my age, you know, I'm a baby boomer, have been saying about young black folks forever, right?
Yes, yes.
So I can't write them off, but you wonder, what will it take? And where are we going? You know, there was an assassination of prime minister a few weeks ago, and then this weekend, the Iranian president's helicopter went down, and you wonder what's next and what is it going to take, and are we all being useful idiots for other powers, you know? And then you have all this false information, and you think about, you want to grasp on the achievements of people like Malcolm and the achievements of people that we have never heard of that sacrificed and survived. I look at the achievements of people like Ron Herndon, who runs Albina Head Start and all the things that he laid the foundation for. You look at people like State Senator Abel Gortley and the foundation that they laid. And then you look at the struggles and achievements of people that you've never heard of, who raised their family, who did the right thing. And they may not feel heard or respected. And they, of course, at times may be attracted to this fascism that's coming down for Trump because they feel victimized, because they don't feel that their struggle is important or that they've had disappointments in their lives that they have not been able to overcome. And that's something that we have to recognize. People don't just wake up and all of a sudden start hating you. They have to learn that. There's something about what's going on in America that I disagree with, but that attracts other Americans. And it's the disappointment, the failure that they feel. But yet they never think about, well, let's correlate it back to Ronald Reagan or correlate it back to Clinton that got rid of, or that signed NAFTA, that got rid of these manufacturing jobs where you could make a living. You know, you have generations under us, Cecil, that are afraid they'll never be able to own a house, or they'll never be able to have $10,000 in the bank. That kind of hopelessness is being programmed into us. And there needs to be, you know, an original idea, or just going back to the ideas that worked in the past. So that state of black America is bleak. I hate to be so pessimistic, but I want to be honest. But look at the foundation that people like Malcolm X laid, the people like locally here in Portland, Oregon, like Ron Herndon and Abel Gortley and others whose names I either forgot or that they worked and should get the recognition. And it's not always the people that you hear about mm-hmm. that deserve the flowers. It's the people behind them and that you never hear about. And they're the ones that we should be ensuring that they get the recognition and the help that they need.
Wow, those are some very powerful words, and just reminding us that we are here because of what other people did. And you reminded us that the foundation is often people we never heard of, or we don't speak of, but because of their labor, we are here, and we have a certain obligation, and I think this is connection with Malcolm and this, our program today, we have an obligation to continue the struggle. And don't give up, and to respond to the needs of the people around us. Yes, the it may seem bleak, but when has it never been bleak?
Right, when it's always been a struggle. When you think, is this ever going to end? And the answer is no, it'll never end. Mm.
But, you know, there's as our friends, the freedom fighters in Mozambique said in their struggle, you know, la luta continua, the struggle continues.
Yeah, the struggle continues. So I encourage your listeners to go back and listen to some speeches. I want to give a shout out to the gentleman in New York who helped figure out that the people that assassinated Malcolm were not necessarily the ones that were in jail. Mm-hmm. And that was a real big reveal on his part. And that was this gentleman's life's work. Yeah. And Netflix did a special on him, who assassinated, or the assassination of Malcolm X. That was really eye-opening. And here you have this gentleman who spent his life right. trying to unravel. And as it turns out, you write, Cecil, the Nation of Islam saved Malcolm, but also the Nation of Islam assassinated Malcolm.
Wow.
Yeah. It turns out one of the killers was in a mosque in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was really, you know, eye-opening and sitting, well, right across the river, right?
Right, right.
Right across the river.
Well, you know, that's a good reminder of you know, the work we have to do, and the struggle continues. And I want to thank you, Lenita, for reminding us to continue the struggle. And you mentioned the person who did that work trying to find out who killed Malcolm, and that was a labor of love. I mean, for decades he worked to find out the fact, and for those who were unjustly put in prison, that they were freed. But the struggle continued, and as you reminded us, we have to continue to pass it on to those around us. And you know, whenever I get tired, I think of people who, as you suggested, most people never heard of, who made it possible for me and for us. Thank you, Lenita. I want to let you go so you can do your civic duty. And thank you for joining us this morning. And we'll talk again soon.
All right, Cecil, it's always an honor to work with you. I wish you and your listeners well. And yeah, Malcolm X. His birthday. Now, I'm looking forward to next year, the 100th year.
100th, yeah.
100th birthday of Malcolm X. You take care, Cecil. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is Monday morning, and we just had a conversation with Lenita Duke, who is a media personality, I guess internationally now, and for her thoughts. She has done a lot of work in the community here in Portland on Malcolm and his legacy. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and we're talking about Malcolm and all things related. Let's go to our next caller. Santiago, how are you?
I'm doing well, Cecil. How are you?
I'm well. What are some of your thoughts today?
Oh, you know, my biggest thought is, you know, when it comes to Malcolm, is not just the experience of having, you know, Malcolm's name whitewashed by conservatives, but also by liberals, because, you know, they will often, you know, there's a lot of liberals, progressives who will often, you know, talk about him. But, you know, the thing is like, you know, when he was talking about like the ballot or the bullet, mm-hmm. you know, he was taught, in how I understood it, is that, you know, it's like we're either going to get the right to vote or we're going to take matters into our own hands. And there's a lot of liberals who will talk about about the sacred right to vote that was given to us. And granted, I'm not black, I'm Chicano, but, you know, we had our own separate struggle mm-hmm. for being able to be represented. But the thing was, is that, you know, Malcolm, when he talked about it, he talked about, like, you know, it was doing for self, like Lenita said, but it was understanding that, you know, if we don't get the thing that we're asking for, then we're going to take it into our own hands and we're going to get it mm-hmm. how by any means necessary. And it's always funny how, like, when you talk about it in that sense, that it also scares liberals because they don't want to think about, like, the fact that, you know, like Fidel Castro said, you know, when he was talking about the guerrilla warfare that he was engaging in against the Bautista regime, is that, you know, war was not what we chose. The powers had left us no choice except to fight. And Malcolm even said himself, you know, if you're not willing to die for if you're not willing to die for liberation, then take the word liberation out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. He was very explicit and didn't mince words on that. When he meant it. And I just think that there's such a lack of spine when it comes to liberals, especially in this time, because, you know, they keep talking about how we're going up against fascists, but they think that we can vote away fascism. You know, they think that Biden is going to save us, but it's like, no, we're going to save us. And if Biden wants to help, that's up to him. But we're ultimately the ones who control our own destiny as a people, as black people, as brown people, as white folks. You know, we control our destiny. Indeed. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
You know, and I just, what I really think about, you know, and it's funny, you know, because, you know, you're talking about Yuri Kochiyama, you know, the other thing, you know, because Ho Chi Minh was mm-hmm. born on the same day mm-hmm. as Malcolm X. And while they never met in life, they had a deep and utmost respect for one another because they both understood what it took to regain control of something that was taken from their people.
Right. Wow. Wow.
You know what I mean? And it's, you know, and we're often taught that, you know, it's the Vietnam War, but it was the Western aggression against the fruit basket of Europe. You know, they needed Vietnamese people to be poor and to be underfed and to simply be propping up Western power. But Ho Chi Minh said, no, my people have the right to self-determination, just the same way that Malcolm was saying it. And the reason why he took it to the UN is because he understood that civil rights only matter for citizens, and he understood that black folks are only paper citizens. We're not real, you know, well, we're, you know, black folks aren't real citizens. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, how are you a citizen, but you're still fighting for your civil rights 70 years later?
You know, and I think what you just mentioned in terms of going before the UN, and I'm thinking of what's happening today and efforts, you know, to bring those responsible before international courts, you know, concerning mm-hmm. genocide, and that You know, there's an international humanitarian justice need, and that's part of the struggle. You mentioned Ho Chi Minh, and I don't want to assume that everyone knows what we're talking about. Ho Chi Minh, who was he?
He was the leader of the Viet Cong in the what we refer to as the Vietnam War, but it was really like their liberation war. You know, they were not just fighting America; they were fighting the French, the Japanese, and at least the French and the Japanese, as far as I remember. But you know, Ho Chi Minh was their leader. It was a pseudonym; it's not his real name, but his
right.
But he was
yes.
his. Yeah, but he was the leader. They called him Uncle Ho. You know, he was people still talk about the supposed missing POWs that never came back, when, you know, all the fact finding that we have about as far as what we've studied, that there are no POWs, but it was something that was propagated by Reagan in a bid against communism to be able to stoke the flames of American imperialism and American exceptionalism.
Hey, well, thank you so much, Santiago, for joining us and for dropping some pearls of wisdom. Hope you have a great day. And as Santiago suggested, Malcolm said, if you're not ready to die for it, put the word freedom out of your vocabulary. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and let's go to our next caller. Janet, good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, I'm so excited to have an opportunity to pitch in after Santiago and Lenita, and you have such a fabulous, wonderful legacy here. I'm thinking about my 1968 thing where the Black Panthers were marching from Bedford-Stuyvesant over on Eastern Parkway, to be thinking kind of more like get into the possibility that we look at the class struggle, that it's not just a racist thing, but the divide between social income inequality is huge. And I think that's probably what sparked off the Say Uncle or Else reactionary capitalist kind of throw it, you know, Say Uncle or you're over it. That kind of be thinking that what you bring up is like so significant, and Lenita and Santiago all such brilliant remarks about the mentor-disciple relationship and how we can influence each other, and that the young people right now, that we really got to applaud them for taking the banner. Brazil, they called it conscientization, to take up the banner of speaking truth to power, because like Santiago was talking about, this buy into fascism is seems to be like really so prevalent right now, that you have to really be brave and have appreciation and sincerity and courage to take a stand or look like a pariah that your neighbors are going to take down, because there's so much propagandization going on. But thank you so much. It's like
I want to ask you a question that occurred while you were sharing just now. You know, you referenced, you know, 68 and other movements. You know, something I'm hearing on the news today, and I'm wondering, have people forgotten who they are, who they were? I'm here of like college administrators and others saying that, oh, the students don't know what they want, or they're unable to articulate well. And it occurs to me that, you know, many of us were young student radicals, and how come we forget that activism, that passion that we once had? And did we just all give it up so we could drive a bigger car?
You make a important statement, not just in in schooling, when I thinking that when I was trained and my sister sent me all these polyester clothes, and me thinking that we're trained, the superintendent in Gresham gave a talk about we're not having students, they're just like cogs in the wheel, and put them on the belt. Mm-hmm. That it's not a matter of humanity or inspiration or critical thinking, a matter of just like complicity and thinking that we go to the casinos and then we hear the songs of Mammon about how much money there is. And then back in the 60s, some of the people who were all fired up, then they became complicit, make a pact with the devil and be thinking it's all about money. And I think that underneath it all, I'd be thinking, I wish Joanne Hardesty would come back. There are some really principled people who had the virtue of their intention. It was like pretty frightening what you're up against. So it really takes a lot of courage to not become sellouts.
Right.
Appreciate this discussion. It's fabulous.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope you have a very good day.
You as well. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I'm Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Today is Monday, the 20th of May, 2024. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we're talking about Malcolm, his legacy. Yesterday, the 19th of May, was the anniversary of his birth in 1925, his 99th birthday. And the legacy, things that we can learn and things that we can share. We began our conversation this morning with Lenita Duke, a journalist, reflecting on Malcolm and what he meant for her and the influence he had on her work. We had a couple of other people call in and speak this morning. Santiago, she had made some connection between Malcolm and other revolutionaries, particularly Ho Chi Minh, and you mentioned Fidel Castro, but also in terms of the importance of organizing. And Janet shared some reflection of 1968 and the need to hear the voices of young agitators and to remain true to our principles. What are some of your thoughts? Had you thought about Malcolm, have you thought about those who agitated in decades past, their relevancy now? I would like to hear your thoughts. Our numbers again are 503-231-8187. And let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO. And we are continuing in our membership drive. So do me a favor. Why don't you go to bit.ly/KBOO and donate? In the meantime, we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Lee.
Cecil,
good morning, Lee.
I am honored by you. You're really an amazing individual, and you probably don't get the credit you deserve. What I wanted to talk about was I saw an article in the New Yorker from November 20th of 23, and it was talking about the opera at the Met in New York, entitled X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X.
Right, yes.
I read that and was absolutely gobsmacked, astounded, that it's such a contradiction.
Oh. So you read the article say something about why it struck you, and I don't suppose you had the opportunity to actually go and see the opera.
Oh, God, no. I mean, you know, I'm too much of an environmentalist to you know, waste that amount of CO2 into the atmosphere.
Well, you know, started, you know, if you get on your bike today, you know, you could get there. But anyway.
Thanks,
you.
No.
Okay.
But, you know, they were talking about the individual who did the costume designs for it, and it just, Malcolm X is an opera?
Well, the cultural influence of peoples and things continue. So that's something people should check out.
Well, I don't know whether, you know, Malcolm X would consider that to be a way for him to be lauded.
Well,
you know, because the people who can afford to go, you know, to see opera at the Met are not the people he was talking to.
The contradictions in our lives. So, yeah. Hey, thank you for raising the point. And what I'm receiving is are we being true to the principles of Malcolm? Thank you.
Absolutely. And the individual who talked about the importance of Haley's, you know, autobiography of Malcolm X was one of the seminal books that I read, you know, shortly after it came out, and you know, was part of my list of the most important books I've ever read.
Right.
You know, he is an influence for me, as is Dr. King.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing and how Malcolm influenced you. And want to remind all of you who have not had the opportunity to pick up the autobiography of Malcolm X and read it again. Let's go to our next caller, Tuatsi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I was born after Malcolm X had already been killed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult for me to really speak with much of a real life understanding, but one of the things that struck me in the history of Malcolm X is how easily his movement was infiltrated. And the reason that's an important aspect to me is because it happened inside of the indigenous movement with Standing Rock and a confidential informant, his weapon being, quote, found on one of the primary people around camp. So it's just, you know, it's just stunning to me how little we pay attention to the role of confidential informants,
right,
and securing convictions against people who are just trying to affect the world for the common good. Because they work as a mechanism in this larger machine that really prevents people from being able to create something good in society.
I'm wondering, thank you for raising that point and reminding us of that, you know, infiltration and how it seeks to upset movement. I think some leaders are aware that the movements are being infiltrated and they carry on. You know, there's an example of Malcolm being very aware that he was being spied on and that he was being set up and that he would be killed by people within his own organization. And people such as Malcolm continue on, even knowing the risk and the infiltration. What do you think movements can do or people can do to either resist or prevent that type of infiltration and the internal destruction of movements?
Well, you know, people talk about security culture. You know, security culture in who you talk to, and you know, which activities you carry out in the public. Because if you want to do good, you can always do good, right?
Yes.
But if you're trying to, like proclaim yourself as a do-gooder and get in, you know, get interviews about doing good and and just like shine in the light of the world as a do-gooder, they're going to come at you. And so a lot of what I think could happen is just doing the things that are the right things.
Right.
You know, we all have inside of our minds this little tiny voice that tells us the right thing to do. And it's just such an innocent and kind voice that really leads our daily lives. And for the roots of fascism to take over on a huge level, we have to ignore that voice that tells us the right thing to do. And so, you know, when we're talking about making the world better and how, what we can do to avoid infiltration, just doing the right things, because they really have to work hard to the point where they murder you if you're just doing the right thing.
Right.
If you're out there doing the wrong thing, it's a lot easier for them to portray you in a bad light. You know, in the instance of Red Fawn, she had a partner with somebody that was a confidential informant. So how do you know if somebody's a confidential informant? In your group, you have to talk to their family and hang out with their schoolmates and be a part of their community so that everybody knows that Jose is a horrible person. You shouldn't hang out with them because he's freaking over there talking to the FBI. Right. If you're that person, your mom and your sister and your brother probably know about it, and your best buddy at school. So if you're just hanging out with that person isolated, they can tell you whatever lies they want to.
Right.
But if you're hanging out with their larger family, a larger group of the people who they talk to, it's harder for them to hide things like that.
Right. Well, thank you so much. I mean, what I'm hearing from you is the importance of community, being aware, and that we don't organize in isolation. And so those are some very important points you're raising and that we need to be aware of. I appreciate you.
Just one last thing, because I think it's really important, is that a lot of the rights that were secured by the people who were fighting back then, like for me, the Native American Religious Freedom Act, that was secured for my liberties. And those liberties are being stripped from us very, very quickly. And I just think it's really important to recognize the victories that we did enjoy and not step away from them, not allow them to slide back.
Right.
Right.
Thank you so much. Freedom is not free, and we need to be vigilant all the time. Thank you so much for sharing. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers here, 503-231-8187, but you may not be able to get in. But Francis called early enough, so we have time to hear. Yes, Francis, it's you.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for reminding me of Malcolm X's birthday. I had forgotten. And it's a bad thing that I forgot, but I'm, as Vanita said, older than smoke myself. I remember reading...
I never heard that phrase before, older than smoke.
Either, I
like
cool.
It, yeah.
I remember reading Malcolm X. I was fortunate when, at a very young age, when I entered Portland State University, to walk into a group of people who were very diverse, and I met about a couple members of the local Black Panther Party, and one of the first books that was recommended to me to understand was the autobiography of Malcolm X. And he helped me. also have a clear world vision, you know, about people dealing with oppression all over the world, as they are right now very severely in Gaza. And I was happy to hear Anita speak about all of that, too. I think I read the book probably right around the time that KABU became a station.
Yeah.
So that's been over 50 years ago. And I, to me, Malcolm X was speaking to everybody.
Yes.
And if there's an opera that speaks about what he was saying and the message that he had, was giving, then the people who can afford to go to the opera need to hear that message. So hopefully that's what will happen. I don't know anything about this opera the man was talking about, but if his message is in there, then that's a good thing.
Exactly.
I appreciate you, and I appreciate you talking about him today.
Thank you so much, Anita. Thank you so much. You've been listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. Been talking about Malcolm, who said, "Time is on the side of the oppressed today. It's against the oppressor. Truth is on the side of the oppressed today. You don't need anything else." Let us remember the legacy of people such as Malcolm and the hundreds of thousands of people we do not know of. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. Stay tuned for more programming.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
KABU Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you.